Welcome back to the BSD YouTube show. Your host, as always, Patrick Kerbler, and I'm joined by Jarrett, Nina, and Tim. We have a stacked show today, guys, because we did not have our Michigan State recap like I had promised. Again, that's do not blame Jarrett, do not blame Tim. It was my fault. I had my timing was off on Sunday, so we're going to talk about the Michigan State game. We'll, of course, preview the Nebraska game. Former Penn State head coach is going to Virginia Tech. We'll touch on that as well. So a stacked show tonight. Let's just jump right into it and not waste any time. Talking about the Michigan State game. Fellas, Penn State won a football game for the first time since September. I was at a wedding, so I didn't see like much of the second half live. I checked in when I could and then obviously watched the recaps on Sunday and Monday. But what were your guys' takeaway from the game and Penn State finally getting a win?
I mean, it was excellent just to enjoy the sweet taste of victory after, you know, 2 months of a six-game losing streak that stretched on for quite a while. Probably my biggest takeaway is that second half we got kind of what we were expecting all along earlier in the season when we got a veteran offensive line coming and, you know, we're thinking, okay, we can wear out opposing defenses and impose their will. And, you know, I mean, Michigan State knew exactly what was coming and they couldn't do anything to stop it. So I know it wasn't the most stout run defense, but it was just really refreshing to see them go out there and impose their will and be able to move the ball that way, considering all the experience they have on the offensive line and just kind of what we were expecting to see out of them heading into the season.
Yeah, I was I was also out of town. I was running the Richmond Marathon last Saturday, but that was in the morning. The game wasn't until 3:30, so I had time to shower up, go meet my friends, my run club at an Irish pub downtown in Richmond, and our BSD colleague Colin Murphy, who lives in the Richmond area, actually joined me to watch the first half of the game. And you know, we were both happy. We were at least ahead at halftime. Didn't like how they give up that big run right off the bat for a touchdown, but after that, the defense really did a good job of clamping down. And this is it's becoming a trend now. It seems like whatever Jim Knowles, whatever Bunsey's pushing, whatever he's doing, like it's finally working as far as, you know, getting pressure on the quarterback, stifling a run game. I mean, Denai Dennis Sutton was a one man wrecking crew, just was living in Michigan State's backfield all afternoon, it seemed, especially towards the second half. So after first half, friends and I went to another place, some billiards place, and I watched second half there. And that's, you know, when I got to see all the awesomeness of Catron Allen just running over everybody. And now he's 139 yards away from coming the all-time rushing leader. So like Jared said, just refreshing to see them assert their will and just jam it down an opponent's throat. And of course,
it was
a Gatorade shower. I mean, like that should have been happening last week after upsetting Indiana, but better late than never.
No, I think you guys hit the nail on the head with like what this game was in some sense, like what we all thought Penn State was supposed to be. I actually missed the Michigan State. I was getting ready for the wedding and saw Penn State went 3-and-out and then went to, you know, brush my teeth and do that whole thing. And I came back and was like, oh, Michigan State already scored. Like, great. Missed it completely. So in my mind, Penn State basically pitched a shutout. It was, you know, a dominant defense. And yeah, just the offense that we thought that we were going to see, one that would lean on the running game, lean on Catron Allen and Nick Singleton, I guess, to a lesser degree. But yeah, just a lot of like, man, what could have been? This is what we thought we were going to see. Really strong defense, really strong rushing play. But still, the reality of the situation is like Penn State is in the spot that they're at, 3-6 and now 4-6. And it was very cool, like just as a fan base to like, I don't know, like I feel like for me, like it almost brought me back to like when I was a child and just a fan of sports in general, but Penn State in particular, where I grew up during my first memories were like the dark years. So like Penn State winning a game when I was like 7 or 8 was like basically the Super Bowl. And like in a weird way, it almost brought me back to that where it's like, okay, I'm not worried about the playoff. I'm not worried about the Big Ten. I'm not checking in to see what did Ohio State do today? What did Alabama or Georgia or all these other schools do today? Like, it was very, like, just a purely, like, pure love. And like, that is, like, what you care about. Just like the thrill of winning. And seeing Terry Smith, you know, get, you know, carried off the field of sorts and the Gatorade bath. It's just awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah, I forgot how nice it felt to just sit back and watch some college games after a Penn State win, and you're just kind of relaxed and satisfied. Yeah. And you just, I don't know, it's just such a better experience just to kind of sit back and enjoy other games from the nation. So just kind of having that pit in your stomach and, you know, seeing highlights over and over of exactly what went wrong. So I really miss that feeling of just getting to enjoy the rest of the day after a win.
No, and I like, listen, like, and we'll talk about James Franklin here in a bit, but right, him leaving, like, changes everything about this program. Like, what we thought next year could be, what we thought the following year was going to be, like, everything is upside down, and I truly have no idea what next year could be. Penn State could be 4-8 next year. Penn State could be 8-4 next year. Penn State could be 10-2 next year. Penn State could be 6-6 next year. Like, we have no idea what this roster is going to look like. We have no idea who the coach is going to be. Everything is up in the air. So it's like, in a weird way, these games are like, just, you're just like, it's almost like the self-help stuff where it's like, you know, be where your feet are at. Like, these games, like, I almost treat them as that, of like these singular 3-hour events that, like, nothing else matters, right? Penn State wins, Penn State loses. Like, the result is the result, but you still, like, enjoy the process of it. So it's just nice to finally win one of those games. And again, not to harp on the Terry Smith aspect of it, but seeing him at his Monday press conference and just say, you know, how he heard from basically everyone in his life after that game, with text messages and phone calls, and just how he, you know, broke down, just said, like, what Penn State means to him. Like, again, not trying to compare it to James, because I truly am not trying to do that, but just the drastic difference of, like, where this program was, you know, 4 weeks ago, 5 weeks ago, after that Northwestern game, where James was, you know, like, just broken as well, but broken in a different way. And then you see Terry Smith, and there's actually some happiness and some excitement. Like, again, it makes me proud to be a Penn Stater, and makes me, it's in a weird way, like, excited for what we can be, despite the fact that everything is up in the air. But,
you know, I will say, I did want to mention this at the top of the conversation. The way the game started out with a pretty ugly 3-and-out, then Michigan State scores on their first offensive snap, I thought, oh, they left it all on the field against Indiana, and they just have absolutely nothing left. And we're not going to see a win until 2026. So thank goodness they were able to kind of settle into the game, and it was a completely different story after that. But yeah, I was, I'll admit, I was pretty nervous at the start of that, thinking, you know, they just didn't have any gas left in the tank, and they were going to be in trouble. But they quickly proved me wrong, fortunately.
I think before we move, you know, just want to sing Ethan Grunkmeyer's praises again. That continues to get better with each passing game, and now that he was not facing such a killer defense for once, I know he only threw the ball like 13 times that game, because didn't really need to. Penn State just ran the dang ball.
And there was a really – he was thrown against a really – into a really nasty win that day, too.
It was, but I'll say that pass, that play-action touchdown to Devontae Ross is a thing of beauty.
Yeah. And even the second half, the couple times he did drop back to throw, to his credit, you know, he kind of surveyed the field, didn't like his options, and just did what he could with his legs and found some holes in the defense.
And also was smart enough to just slide down and not
– Yes, that too. Yes, because if he goes out, I believe Liam Clifford's going to be under center, so that could get interesting.
Yeah, that would not be ideal, especially now that Penn State is, you know, I think this is a good transition for us to talk about Nebraska, if we still want to, you know, mention things from the Michigan State game, of course. But we're alive for a bowl. Like, it's, you know, all this talk about, like, when Penn State fired James Franklin, and knowing that Iowa and Ohio State and Indiana was coming up, and the likelihood of being 3-6, like, does this team quit? Do they not? Very clearly, they're not quitting. We'll, you know, talk about Nebraska here. They're a different beast than Michigan State, right? This, at the end of the day, Michigan State is still a winless Big Ten team. Like, Penn State beating them is not anything that, you know, shows like, oh, this Penn State team is necessarily turning a corner. I think that win was, you know, to be expected in a lot of ways. Nebraska is a different animal, though. It's a really, really good defense. Offense a little bit different now that Royal is out, but I think that this is going to be a different type of test for Penn State. So, Jared, I'll start with you just because I know that you have the you know, you've been working on the game preview and stuff that will be going live on blackshoediaries.com tomorrow. It's a website. Check it out. What should we know about the Cornhuskers as Matt Rhule and company come to?
Well, it's kind of similar position as Michigan State, as they changed their quarterback and their offense is going to be a little bit different than what you might have seen earlier in the year. With Rayola under center, they really like to focus on the pass. TJ Lateef is a freshman who's going to be the starter moving forward, filling in for him. He's a true dual threat quarterback, which is, you know, a reason to be concerned considering Penn State struggles to stop scrambling quarterbacks. He's the type of guy, I think it's partly his experience level. He only played twice this season early in the year. And that was against Akron and Texas. Houston Christian, I think. I was going to say Texas Christian, but that's TCU. So obviously it wasn't
used to be Houston Baptist at one point.
Yes, yeah. Thank you. Yeah, Houston Christian. So you know, didn't really have a murderer's row to start his career until he stepped in the USC game. But yeah, he's the type of player who, you know, his first read isn't there. He might just tuck it and run. So they've been leaning also into Emmett Johnson more, the running back who's actually leads the Big Ten in rushing yards. He's already over 1,000 yards, only one of two Big Ten running backs to do that right now. I think we'll see a little bit different of an offensive attack from them, where they're going to try to focus on just, you know, pounding Emmett Johnson at the defense, and, you know, letting Lateef probably get a little creative. He did have a really good game in his first start against UCLA. He was 13 of 15, 205 yards, three touchdowns, didn't have any interceptions, hasn't thrown an interception yet in his career, which is pretty impressive for a freshman. The offense will look a little bit different than you know, what we may have been expecting. But Lateef, I'd say, is a pretty dangerous player. Seems like he's got a ton of potential, you know, short in experience, but – you know, a phenomenal athlete, and did very well against the UCLA defense for what that's worth. The other thing I'll mention too is Nebraska's offensive line had a lot of trouble protecting Rayola, and I don't know if this was the level competition or what, but Lateef has not been sacked yet this year. So USC wasn't able to get to him in the second half, and UCLA wasn't able to get to him at all last week. But there was other games where Rayola got sacked 9 times against, I believe, Minnesota, 7 against Michigan, 5 against Michigan State. Yeah. So they've had games where they've really struggled to protect the quarterback, which could be good news for Penn State.
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned that, because I do know that Nebraska has some questions on that offensive line, but that was like always my takeaway when I would watch Nebraska, especially with, you know, Penn State's head coach opening and Matt Rhule being the coach. I had mentioned that I was watching more and more Nebraska as of late. Rhule has like, talk about a guy that just has like no sense or feel. Like, he tries to play like, shocker, tries to play like Pat Mahomes, where he is trying to navigate the pocket. The thing with Mahomes is that he's like a way better athlete than given credit for, or than like most people think. He's really good at like escaping, like just narrowly. And Dylan Rhule is a below average athlete for quarterback and does not have this quick feed, and it turns into a lot of sacks. So not surprising that a more athletic guy would have a little bit more success, and could just also be the case of, you know, Lateef probably is mostly just gonna be like a one read or two read guy, and then is probably already, you know, that internal clock is going on in his head and he's going to try and get out of there, where Rhule was trying to keep plays alive. But Tim, we'll go to you. So what are you expecting out of this game? I feel like you've been my vibes guy as we've gone into these games, kind of trying to figure out what to expect from Penn State. 7 o'clock kick in November, which is very funny. Like, this late into November for a prime time-ish kick for Penn State's an interesting one. So what are you expecting? Just the energy, the environment, the atmosphere, just the vibes of Penn State on senior day in a prime time game?
I think considering where Penn State is with their record, it's going to be a pretty solid atmosphere Saturday night, especially coming off, you know, a win against Michigan State and still you know, still alive for bowl eligibility, or, and more importantly, Catron Allen, like I said before, he only needs to average 69.5 yards these next two games in order to, in order to,
you guys, 67. All right, go ahead.
Oh, let's not go there. and so, he has to, you know, average less than 70 yards these next two games in order to become the all-time rushing leader. And of course, it's senior day, so guys like Drew Aller, Nick Singleton, Catron Allen, Denidas Sutton, all these guys who are part of that class of 2022 are going to be playing their final games in Beaver Stadium. And of course, you know, we get the storyline of Matt Rhule coming back, you know, to his alma mater, who obviously he's not with Canada at this point for the opening.
Who knows?
Maybe this is maybe they'll announce it at halftime. He's taking over the team. I don't know. But it's, you know, just all these factors in there. And, you know, when it's Saturday night, you know, Central PA, and it's, you know, it's the last game of the year. Just, I feel like I think the energy and turnout's going to be better than you might think. And I think, I don't know, do you want to just go straight into a prediction here or just save it?
Save it. Sorry, I had to. Thank you.
Yeah, maybe, yeah, a little six. Yeah,
gotta do my 6-7.
I'm saying, yeah, but yeah, we're. I think. I'll save it for the prediction, but I think it's gonna be.
No, you can give your prediction. I was just gonna say, like, I have this stupid, like, if college football was like WWE and scripted, like, there's definitely something where Pat Kraft turns heel and like hits Terry Smith with a chair, and then Matt Rhule comes out and like makes a save and takes off his shirt, and like he's, you know, he's wearing like a Penn State shirt underneath. But I haven't fully like thought it out yet, so I'll just stop there. So Tim,
I think Catron Allen.
Just real quick, by the way, Penn State is an 8.5-point favorite, so keep that in mind.
I have Penn State covering, and I have Catron Allen breaking Evan Royster's rushing record.
Wow!
In prime time in Happy Valley, he goes for 150 plus yards on the ground against a suspect Nebraska run defense. It's gonna be reminiscent of when Larry Johnson against Michigan State in 2002. That was my freshman year. I was in the student section for that. When I think in the first half alone, he rushed for like 200 plus yards and broke and became the first 2,000 yard plus yard rusher, first and only 2,000 yard rusher.
I still remember.
Gonna say I was at that game as well. Fourth quarter, I was on the Jumbotron. So
nice.
You might have seen 8-year-old Pat or 9-year-old Pat, or I guess what it's 9. Yeah, 9-year-old Pat. So invisible string, just tying us together, Tim. Tying us together. Go ahead, Jarrett. Sorry.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I still remember driving up to that game and telling my dad, I think the number was like 279. I was like, he needs 279 to get to 2,000. You know, that's a pretty tall order. And like Tim said, by halftime, he already had it. They just absolutely could not stop him. Yeah, but I still remember when he broke that run that got him 2,000, and obviously a different time, people carrying cameras with them, but you just saw like flash bulbs going up like all over the stadium. It was still like one of the coolest moments I remember from being at a game.
What was your – did you give your score prediction to?
I'm saying 31-14. I think Penn State's going to win more handily than you might think. I think they're going to feed off that atmosphere, and Catron's going to feast.
All right. I'm going to push it to Jarrett because I want to think about this a little bit more. Jarrett, go ahead.
I did want to bring up a point first, and this kind of piggybacks off of what Tim was saying about your prediction of Catron. Nebraska has the third best passing defense in the nation. Very stingy through the air. Their rushing defense is 91st in the nation. So I feel like that bodes pretty well for Catron and Penn State, that if you are going to move the ball against this Nebraska defense, you can do it in the ground. And they seem to have found something the last couple of weeks that we've been waiting for all year. So I'm kind of going back and forth because there are things that do scare me about the Nebraska offense with Lateef. But I think they'll be able to. I think he's going to get some create some big plays. I think they'll create some chunk plays. But I think overall, the Penn State defense will settle in and find success. So I'm going to go. I've been going back and forth on this. I'll say 28-20. So Penn State wins, but it's enough to be fairly close throughout.
I'm going to go a little bit closer score in this. I am going to pick Penn State mostly because I have a bit of trouble in a weird way of seeing Matt Rhule win. Like, it just feels like he is not going to be Penn State. So I think this is a super low scoring game. I do see the over under is set at 44.5, which I'm a terrible gambler, so don't listen to me, but I'd be hammering that under, hammering it. I'm going to have it 17-16, Penn State wins. I think it's just going to be an ugly game, right? It's going to be in the 30s. I believe at that point, it's supposed to rain a little bit in the morning, but I don't think it's supposed to rain at all in the evening. So a dry night, but still, I can just see it being, you know, just like a throwback Big Ten type game. Penn State trying to run the ball, Nebraska trying to run the ball. Both defenses pretty solid. So yeah, I'll go with Penn State squeaking one out on senior day. Make sure that Katron and Nick Singleton and Denai Denison and those guys walk out with a victory. So I have it Penn State 17, Nebraska 16.
I think this is also going to be, Tim kind of touched on this earlier, but I think this will be the best atmosphere you'll ever see for a 4-6 home team. I think the fans are really good, especially after they came out during the Indiana game. I know it's a different opponent, but just, you know, Nebraska's a historical power. It's a night game. You know, the fans will just be really thirsting for a victory. They'll really want to see the seniors sent out on the right foot. So I think it's really going to be a really fun atmosphere, and hopefully enough to get Lateef a little bit shaky and, considering his lack of experience.
I hope so. I don't know if a night game helps or hurts in this case, just with it being in late November. And it's not supposed to be like super cold, but it is supposed to be like, I think it's going to be like 35 at kickoff or something like that. So the other side of it is that Penn State students start their break this coming weekend. Like, they don't have any classes at all. And just what I've seen on TikTok, like after the Indiana game, I saw a lot of Penn State students being like make videos of like last game as a student. I'm like, Nebraska game, Nebraska game, Nebraska game, but it doesn't seem like they're listening to me. So I would be curious what the student section looks like, but yeah, I do think that they'll be pretty, I don't know if there's going to be 100,000 in the stadium, but I do think overall it'll be a fun atmosphere, or at least I'm hoping so. I will be at the game, so I will be one of the six souls that will be there watching the best.
You may be one of the six, seven souls there. See what I did?
Here we go. Now this podcast, this YouTube show is going to go viral.
I was going to say, if people our age know are in on this, like, it's total, it's past the kids quite a long time ago.
Yes. Well, that's the other
funny thing. We're going to rename this the BSD 6-7 show. Yeah. You know.
So. The funny thing is that our audience does skew a little bit older. So I'm curious if there's a lot of people listening to this or watching this that are just greatly confused as to what we're doing. Unfortunately, I have no explanation for 6-7 at all. So I'm just going to leave it at that. Let's talk about James Franklin, everyone's favorite freaking topic, talking about James Franklin. He officially was named Virginia Tech's new head football coach. Had his press conference today, said alignment, I believe, 10 times. Did make mention of Penn State, then just called it the last place, made mention of Penn State. Talked about airports. I mean, he really just, you know, he played all the hits. He played all the hits. I'll leave it up to you guys, or let you guys start. Thoughts on James going to Virginia Tech? I mean, I would have rather him go to Arkansas or to UCLA than Virginia Tech, but what are our thoughts?
I was a little surprised. I think we talked about this a couple weeks ago when the reports started to surface, and I think we were all aligned that we thought that he wouldn't be going to Virginia Tech, at least not quite earlier, kind of waiting to see, you know, what else opens up. So I was a little bit surprised, but I do think it's a good fit for him. I think he'll win a ton of games at Virginia Tech, honestly, and can really build something there, especially in the ACC. And you don't have Ohio State or Alabama or Georgia, a team to just constantly, you know, bang your head against. So it's a good fit for him. I think he'll do pretty well there. I don't know what their ceiling is. I could see them, you know, being the ACC championship game, you know, going on a run where they're winning or at least playing the ACC championship game and then, you know, losing in the first round by a couple scores. So that's kind of where I'm guessing where this is going to be heading. But yeah, I think he's going to win a lot there. I just don't know how far he'll take him.
You know, I saw people make I forget it was on Blue Sky or Twitter or maybe the message board, but someone compared it to, you know, you break up after a long-term relationship and then you see your ex already posting Instagrams of her of another dude. And then you're still searching for your next person. And so it's a little awkward, kind of maybe a little infuriating, but it's all seriousness though. It's, you know, I'm happy for James. You know, I liked them. I wanted things to work out at Penn State. Obviously it didn't. But you know, I wish them all the best, except whenever, if Penn State and Virginia Tech ever cross paths somehow, maybe the playoffs someday. But as far as like what Tech fans should expect, I think he can, you know, they're a program that hasn't, I really they hadn't had a 10 win season since 2011. So, and I mean, if he can just string like a 10 win season, which I think is very possible in the ACC. Yeah. I mean, there's no Ohio State or Oregon or even like Michigan, Indiana, or whatever flavor, Big Ten flavor of the year program is down there. That's going to be a thorn in your side year in and year out. You know, I think being a more wide open conference, I think will help immensely. And I think, you know, he's going to increase the talent level of his recruiting ability. You know, they're not in the best place talent wise right now. And I'm not saying he's going to make, you know, bringing like top 15 classes to Blacksburg, but you know, he will, you know, get his share of blue chippers and high three-star guys. And I think, you know, he'll hire a good staff. There's rumors that he's looking at Joe Moorhead as his offensive coordinator again, maybe getting the band back together there.
So mean.
So, and so, I mean, I think, you know, I can see him stringing a bunch of like 8, 9, even 10 win seasons together consecutively. And Hokie fans would gladly take that because they've really been in the abyss post Frank Beamer. You know, Justin Fuente, people thought this would be a home run hire. He really had a really good first year, but then things just really tanked under him. And then Brent Pry, you know, did the best that he could to try to revive the program, but it wasn't enough. So
yeah. And from what I understand, Virginia Tech was just really, really far behind on the whole NIL situation when everybody kind of caught up to speed a lot quicker than they did.
Yeah.
They were really behind the eight ball. So I know they're making a pretty big investment, and I'm sure, you know, Franklin will have a lot more opportunity than Pry did in that regard and building a roster.
Absolutely. And yes, John Peterson, I agree. Yes, it's weird seeing him in maroon and orange colors, but
yeah, it's like seeing a Penn State grad in Notre Dame colors, John. That's all. the thing with James, you can't argue against the hire. Like it was the hire that Virginia Tech had to make, just based on what he's done at Penn State, the fact that he still is only 53, right? It's not like hiring a 61-year-old or someone in their 60s. Like, he's still within reason in his coaching prime, or at least believed to be. I mentioned this in Slack, and you know, you can say I'm being a hater or say I'm not being a hater, but what coach was fired from a blue blood-esque program, whether Penn State's a blue blood or not, doesn't greatly matter here, but right, what coach has been fired from a top 15 program who then went to a lesser program? Again, no offense to Virginia Tech. I think Virginia Tech, like as far as like upside goes, is like they're probably like top, I'd say they're definitely top 30, if not even inching closer to that top 25 if they had the investment. But who would leave who's left a top 15 program and has gone to a lesser program and it has done better? I can't really think of too many instances. Like, I can think of like negative ones, like Les Miles going from LSU to Kansas, Kevin Sumlin leaving Texas A&M, going to Arizona.
Would you count Lane Kiffin?
So that was the one that Colin actually mentioned in Slack, right? Going from USC to
Florida Atlantic
for a bit, or went to Bama and then Florida Atlantic and then eventually Ole Miss. I don't know. Like that's my only thing that I feel like just maybe we're all overlooking with this, because the amount of research that I've done just with Penn State going through this coaching search, and I know I told you guys we weren't going to talk coaching search, but this does have to do with Franklin. Like, this idea of we as fans like need to have the self-awareness that like we don't have any idea what we're talking about. Like, this is all just hot air and just doing it for fun. Like, go back and look at any year coaching search or coaching hires 2022, 2018, 2015, and look at the grades that they give. There's no rhyme or reason to why something works, when it works, how it works. Grand Slam hires completely fail. Terrible hires completely work out. So just the, in a weird way, like the outpouring of support from the media and James going to Virginia Tech, which I agree with, like, right? Like, Virginia Tech couldn't have said no to James. Like, it just makes way too much sense with, you know, just what he's done at Penn State, what he's accomplished, how he's been able to recruit, his familiarity with the area, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But there is a part of me that's just like, I don't know, doesn't work out. And the other side of it, which I know Virginia Tech fans are not going to want to hear, and again, this sounds like sour grapes, maybe it is, if James goes 8-4 next year, and then he goes 10-2 and he wins the ACC and he gets in as an 11 seed, and then a big SEC job opens up, and now Franklin has washed some of that Penn State stench off of him, is he sticking around Virginia Tech for the rest of his career? Do we think that this is James Franklin's last coaching job if he has success?
I was actually going to ask you the same question, because I've been kind of playing around with that thought in my mind too. And I could see him, you know, 2-3 years from now, rips off a couple ACC titles, and all of a sudden he's kind of like the Lane Kiffin of that coaching search, where there's several teams, you know, vying for services. So would he go to a Notre Dame or Michigan or Texas? I'm just, you know, spitballing here, just a big time program that suddenly has an opening and he's the hot name in that coaching cycle. So, or, you know, knowing him, I'm kind of leaning towards he's the type of guy who, considering what we saw from out of Penn State, he's going to stay there and just give it everything he has. But at the same time, if you think about Virginia Tech's history, they really had one era that was where they were a top 10 team.
Yeah.
You know, they made one national title game. That was the furthest they went. And I mean, let's be honest, if they didn't have Michael Vick, they weren't going to make it that far that year. So for those that anybody young enough to not really watch him play college, I can't really overemphasize just how dangerous he was and just kind of how unstoppable he was. So just elevating the whole team to a wholly totally different level. So yeah, I mean, they're before that they were pretty much always on the bottom of the ACC. After, you know, even towards the end of Beamer's career, they were pretty average, and they've been pretty average to below average since then. So I don't know, I kind of think he might take a wait and see approach. I wouldn't be shocked if he did jump after, you know, 2-3 years if he gets things humming there, because you know, he may see the writing on the wall and say, well, Texas wants me, or LSU wants me, or whoever the case may be, and I can go win a national title. And I don't think I can, you know, the farthest I can take Virginia Tech is winning the ACC and, you know, maybe upsetting someone in the first round of the playoffs. But I don't think he's going to be able to get them in the shape where they're truly competing for national titles every year.
No, you said it. I was going to say, Jared, I mean, yeah, as far as I know, he still has a life goal of being the first African American head coach to win a national championship. And, you know, let's be real, you're not going to do that at Virginia Tech. Like, he can, like I said, he can win the ACC, can get into the playoff, but you're not winning a natty at Virginia Tech. So if he's able to string together a couple highly successful seasons, and if the right jobs open up in the SEC or even the Big Ten, I could definitely see him jumping elsewhere.
I just think, right, you look at the landscape of college football, and what two conferences do you want to be in right now? You want to be in the SEC, you want to be in the Big Ten.
Exactly.
And nothing's going to change that. If anything, that divide, that chasm is only going to get wider and wider and larger and larger. And hey, maybe James goes there 8-4, 10-2, 10-2, back-to-back ACC champions, and we get some more alignment or realignment with conferences. Sorry, James, not didn't want to say the A word there. Realignment with conferences. And maybe Virginia Tech is now in that group, but with Clemson and Florida State and North Carolina, of okay, they can go to the Big Ten, they can go to the SEC, and maybe it's all different then. Again, I'm not trying to make it sound like sour grapes. I think it's a great hire for Virginia Tech. It's something that they had to do. I think it works out. I just don't think that it's as simple as he goes there and boom, they're going 10-2, 11-1 every year, and he's going to do that for the next 10 years. I think being a college football coach is really, really hard, and there's a shelf life to everyone. And yes, James is young. He's only 53, but I'm just a little bit curious of how he does rebuilding a program. Like, it's easier, it's harder. I don't even necessarily know, like, in this day and age with NIL and the transfer portal, which that's a good segue into kind of my last point with James, is just that he's going to be a pain in the ass when it comes to transfer portal stuff this next month. Like, I know that we're all, like, I know for myself, like, I would love nothing more than to just put a bow on James Franklin and yeah, good luck, and that's going to be it, and do whatever you have to do. But there's going to be multiple, double digits, Penn State players that will be playing at Virginia Tech next year. Like, that's just, and maybe it's some four string guys, maybe it's some starters. Like, I just hope Penn State fans are ready, because James is, that's where he's going to go. It's right. It's transformational. It's not transactional. It's relationships, relationships, relationships. Where does he have relationships? Who does he have relationships with? So, recruiting front, he's going to be a pain. Yeah, that happens. Like, that's, you know, it is what it is in that sense. But I think that there is going to be a lot of sting, as no matter who Penn State gets as head coach, you're going to have some guys that are going to be outgoing and are going to follow him to Virginia Tech. So, we'll see. We will see. But yeah, I mean, I guess good luck in some sense. But as I said on Twitter yesterday, like, I'm also not going to wish him the best, because the best probably means bad things. Like, it means Penn State's losing some players that I probably don't want them to lose. So I want them to stay at Penn State. My loyalty is to Penn State. My loyalty is not to James Franklin, but we'll see. Best of luck, James. Best of luck. Any final thoughts on James and Virginia Tech?
I think it's a good fit for both parties. Again, a little surprised he didn't, you know, wait around, but maybe just kind of knew that, you know, this was going to be his best opportunity, or as a place where he could get started right away and hit the ground running, which I think was very appealing for him.
And I don't think
yeah,
Florida
I think
State
he's gonna.
sorry. Now, it didn't seem like Florida State was going to open up. Maybe it still does at the end of the year, but it seems like they're too broke to fire Mike Norvell. So that was maybe the one
And I
job.
also think a lot of, yeah, I think a lot of programs are a little hesitant to fire their coaches right
I
now.
mean, Florida
If they
State was
may have otherwise in other
Wisconsin,
seasons, but
Maryland.
why do you want to join a really crowded coaching search and you know really have to settle for someone in the long run?
Precisely.
Yeah, it is crazy that, like, last year, like, Florida State, which, okay, they didn't want to fire Mike Norvell because it was even a bigger buyout last offseason, but they could have had their pick of whoever they wanted. Same with Florida. I know Napier won some games at the end that basically saved his job, but same thing. It's just funny how, and I know,
Weren't there
like,
just
the
two
takeaway.
firings last year?
What was that?
I want to say there's only like two last year, which seems astronomically low.
North Carolina was the best job.
What? Yeah, North Carolina, West Virginia, and I don't know if there was a whole lot
Yeah.
other than that. So
No,
it
not.
was that's strange because there's usually just a lot more openings than that,
Yeah.
but it's just
I know
it was a whiplash from
people
last year
thought
to
it
this
was
one.
like a changing of like, oh, like NIL's so more important now and paying your roster, like you're not gonna see. And then this offseason they were like,
You don't have why? Yeah, I
no,
remember that was a talk of the
don't
off
worry.
season, and then yeah, that was completely blown out of the water after a few weeks.
And then Kirk Cignetti got $90 million, and every school's like, okay, I guess we're doing this again. Guaranteed. Here you go, Kurt. Here you go, Lane. Here you go, Mike Elko. So No Penn State coaching search talk tonight on this show. I am going to have a show coming out. I'm going to record it tomorrow. I don't think I'm going to do it live. I'll probably release it Friday morning. That's going to be just a coaching search related show. So you can get your coaching search fix later this week on the BSD YouTube channel, which great time to mention. Please subscribe. We're at 398 subscribers before we start it tonight. Absolutely zero reason that we shouldn't be at 400 after this. To the 398 that already subscribed, thank you so much. We greatly appreciate it. Make sure that you are liking the videos as well.
Helps Let's get out. To 409 by
409 for senior day.
By Rutgers weekend.
Oh. 409 for Matt Rhule.
For Matt Rhule.
What an honor for Matt. All right. Let's get some picks. And guys, we're doing great. I told Tim and Jarrett before the show that I wanted to keep this under an hour, and we're at 41 minutes. Look at us. Who would have thought that we could do the recap, the preview, talk about James Franklin at Virginia Tech, and still get this in under an hour? This college football slate sucks this weekend. Like, wow, bad. The SEC is doing their, you know, playing Mercer and Grand Valley State and a whole bunch of other teams that they usually do the weekend before Thanksgiving. So
I just want to say how much I hate that setup, because like you're in mid to late November now, and things are just getting like really down to the wire, and you just have so much potential for those huge matchups. Then they just throw it all away, and you just get a whole bunch of exhibition games basically.
Yeah, no, it's very silly. I understand.
Might go away with the SEC going to a 9-game conference schedule next year.
Yes, I hope so.
I think it will. And in their defense, it does beef up some of the earlier season stuff too. When you know the Big Ten is doing their tour of playing, you know, Delaware and Coastal Carolina and stuff like that. So anyway, big game in the Big Ten. This is where College Game Day is going to. USC at Oregon. The Ducks are 9.5-point home favorites. USC is fighting for their playoff lives. I think basically if they win this game, they then, I imagine, at the end of the year with UCLA. So I think that they would be in as a 2-loss Big Ten team. What are we thinking here? Can UCLA pull off the upset? Does Oregon get a big win and then kind of solidifies their spot in the playoff?
I think Oregon wins, but I got the Trojans covering this one. I like how I think the way they came back on Iowa after being down by 2 touchdowns and kind of beat them at their own game in a way. It shows to me they're starting to finally acclimate to the physicalness of Big Ten play. I don't know. Oregon just hasn't. There's not a team that's really. They're not lighting up the scoreboard like they've done in years past, and. I don't know, 9.5 is a lot to lay on the Ducks for a matchup like this. I'm thinking something like, you know, maybe like a, you know, 31-24 type of game for Oregon.
Yeah, I'm not certain if Oregon's as good as we thought, you know, earlier in the year. And they're really banged up now. I think their top 3 receivers, even their top 4, are all out of the lineup right now. They got a lot of injuries all throughout. So I do still think they can win this game. But USC, like Tim said, USC showed me something last few weeks, and they just seem like they're a better team in the line of scrimmage. So I think they'll hang tough with Oregon, but I think Oregon will eventually, you know, end up winning by about 4 points or so. So give me USC in the points.
I'm gonna.
You know what? And let me say this: every time I believe in USC under Lane Kiffin, I end up shooting myself in the foot. So
Lincoln Riley
or Lincoln Riley, yeah. Maybe I shouldn't be believing USC, but just based off of the evidence I've seen, I'll say USC. Hangs in there and loses a close one.
Yeah, I mean, my gut initial instinct is USC, so I think I have to go Oregon, which, sorry, I didn't tally up our scores from last week, but I had Pitt, which was a loss, Texas, which was definitely a loss, and USC only won by 5, so if I remember correctly, that's also a loss. So I'm 7-20 on the year, just really, really proving myself in all glory here. Tim, you had Pitt. That was a loss. USC, that was a loss. And Georgia, so you went 1-2, bringing you to 14 and 13. And then Jared, you had Pitt, which was a loss, Iowa, which was a win, and Georgia. So you went 2-1. So Jared, you were at 12 and 15. So you two are fighting out 14 and 13 versus 12 and 15.
Still above 500.
Yeah, I will go Oregon just because you guys both went with USC. And again, I'm going to try and fade myself the best I can. Easier said than done, because then I got my own head. Am I actually fading myself? Am I fading my fade? But I'll go with Oregon here. It does feel like I feel like a lot of the bets in my best guess would be on USC. This is a pretty big spread for a USC team that, you know, is ranked in the top 20. So I'll go with Oregon. I'll go with Oregon to cover the 9.5. It's going down to the ACC, where Pitt goes to Georgia Tech. Pitt coming off the the blowout loss to Notre Dame, whatever you want to call it. Georgia Tech trying to basically, they would clinch a spot in the ACC title game. Pitt needs to win this if they want to go to the ACC title game as well to keep their chances alive. So a lot to play for in this one in Atlanta. What are we thinking here? Tim, we'll start with you.
Yeah, I mean, Tech's coming off. They damn near got upset by a one-win Boston College team last week. They needed a last-minute field goal to avoid the upset. But, you know, I think back home, I think they put it together. You know, I think Pitt will be more competitive than they were with Notre Dame last week. But, you know, 2.5 for Georgia Tech, I mean, that feels like easy money for me.
Yeah, I was really hoping you weren't going to pick this one just because, you know, Pitt on one hand, you know, they moved in the rankings last week just by beating every bad team in the ACC for 5 weeks in a row. And then Georgia Tech has been kind of a mess the last few games, and especially on the defensive side of the ball. Like Tim said, they just barely were able to eke out a win against a one-win BC team. But, yeah, I think I'm going to follow the same logic. You know, Haynes King at home, I think Georgia Tech wins this one by at least a field goal. So give me the Yellow Jackets.
Pitt's one of those teams that I can never get a great read on. So, again, tough for me to fade myself in this case, but I think I like Pitt here. ACC, it's right very much in that, like, the Mark May and Lou Holtz and Reese Davis, the ACC Wheel of Destiny thing that they used to do back in the day. This is very much an ACC Wheel of Destiny type season. You just spin it and you don't know where it's going to end up. Georgia Tech, Jared, like you said, like they've been a mess. Somehow they're 9-1, but they are the messiest 9-1 team that I think I've ever seen. It's like you check the Georgia Tech game when they're playing some schlub ACC team. It's like, oh, they're down 17-0 and only 4 minutes has gone by in the first quarter. And then you check on it at the end, and it's like, oh, Georgia Tech, they won by a field goal, or they won by 2 points. So tough to know with this, like, 2.5-point spread, but I'll take Pitt here. Pitt here to at least cover, if not win outright, just because I think the ACC is just kind of all over the place. So give me Narduzzi and Pitt to keep their ACC title hopes alive and to essentially end Georgia Tech's playoff hopes. And, you know, Brent Key then has, you know, December off, and he can decide to do whatever he wants to do with, you know, any jobs that maybe want to hire him. But lastly, we go to the FCS, where College Game Day should have went. Montana State versus Montana, number 3 Montana State, number 2 Montana. It doesn't get any better than this. I don't have my Montana sweatshirt on right now, but let me start us off. You just don't go in the disrespect of FanDuel to put the Montana Grizzlies, my Grizz, as underdogs, home dogs, in the friendly confines of Grizzly Montana Stadium. How dare you? How dare you? Give me Montana to cover and give me Montana outright.
You see this? I'm rocking a maroon vest in honor of Montana.
Thank you.
11-0, undefeated in conference play. Montana State's 9-2. I don't know how the hell they're favored in this one. I understand it's a rivalry game, but like I said, this is in Missoula. This is at Washington Grizzly Stadium. Like,
thank you, Tim.
The disrespect card is something that Montana's players and staff should absolutely be hammering on this one. Give me the Grizz.
Yeah, I'm the same. You know, I can't say I'm an expert in either of these teams, but Montana is one of those teams I watch. I am actually someone who loves watching the FCS playoffs every year. Grew up in the Youngstown area when Jim Tressel was there, winning national titles over Marshall and Boise State back in the early to mid 90s before he left for Ohio State. So, yeah, I'm always up for a great FCS game, and Montana's you know, one of those premier programs. And yeah, I'm with you, Patrick. Why they would be a home underdog is beyond me. So I'm with the Grizz as well.
You don't just walk into Washington Grizzly, right, Tim? Washington Grizzly Stadium, and think that you're going to stop quarterback Hilaili Ayat. You're going to stop running back Eli Gilman. Receivers Michael Wortham, Brooks Davis, Blake Bohannon.
Drew Everyone Dack, knows Jordan about Denver. Bohannon.
You see this? Get out of here. Montana Grizzlies all day. The only shame of this game is that I think it's noon or 1 o'clock Eastern time, which don't like that. Don't like that. This should be a night game. This should be like 11:30 ESPN2. Like, you're right. All the other college football games are done with. You're about to go to bed and you're like, dude, we got Montana State at Montana at night. Let's go. But yes, Montana's going to win this game. 100%. 100%. Those Montana State Bobcats, they have no choice. They have no chance. Give me the Grizz. All right. I think that's the most fired up I've been, even probably more than Penn State. Don't mess with my Grizz. Don't mess with my Grizz. All right. We will be back. Well, I will not be back, actually. Well, okay. I will be back for the Coaching Search podcast. I will not be back on Saturday for the post-game show. Tim and Jared are going to take care of us with that. Coming on after Nebraska, hopefully talking about a 5-6 Penn State team. That'd be awesome. That'd be great. Any final thoughts before I log us off, fellas?
Well, it feels good to be doing this after a win for once. So hopefully I'm hopeful the good times will continue to roll these next couple of weeks. And then that leads into finally finding out who the next head coach is going to be for Penn State.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll just say there's been a lot of lows this season, but, you know, I actually am genuinely excited for Saturday. And just, you know, I think it's going to be an incredible atmosphere. And it's kind of be one of those things, kind of like you said, Patrick, where, you know, you're into a game. And for those 3 hours, that's kind of all that matters. And we're just going to kind of forget about everything that's happened prior to this. And, you know that we're not playing for a playoff spot or anything like that. But just enjoy the heck out of a what should be a hard-fought game in a really electric atmosphere. So. Yeah, season hasn't gone the way we wanted, but hey, let's enjoy Saturday night.
This is fandom, right? Like, and I've mentioned this, and I know I sound like a broken record. What fans want, what sports fans want, is they don't want consistency. They want hope. They want something to play for, something to believe in. And that's even the case right now. Like, I would truly much rather be in this spot of like, you know what, we're 4-6. Let's beat Nebraska. Let's beat Rutgers. Let's get to 6-6 and be eligible for a bowl game and probably turn it down because we're not going to have enough players playing it. But still, right? Then to do this song and dance of, oh, we're going to go 10-2. Oh, we're going to go 9-3. And I know that makes me sound like spoiled. And maybe I am. Maybe I'm a little bit spoiled. But I just want something different. And these last couple of games have shown that, right? Beating Michigan State was fun. Hopefully beating Nebraska will be fun. Hopefully beating Rutgers will be fun. Game to 6-6, like, hitting that goal when you weren't sure if Penn State was going to get to it or not, like, that is fun. And that is fandom. That is what we're searching for. So, yeah, here's to the drive to six. So we will see you guys a little bit later. Like I said, we'll have a coaching search show coming up on probably Friday morning. And then we'll be back Saturday night for the Nebraska recap. Until then, stay safe and we'll see you.